Good morning, Dave. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, still.
Hey,
How
man.
you doing?
Brilliant. I'm doing well. How about you?
There's a thunderstorm here this morning, still. That
Ooh.
never happens. It's ominous.
Sounds romantic.
Yeah, I guess it would be if I hadn't woken up and immediately went to go record a podcast with my nerdy friends.
Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Stu, how you doing?
I am doing terrific. And you?
Oh boy, Stu, it's raining here. I live in Mesa, Arizona, so it's a big deal. It's raining. I'm hearing some thunder in the background.
You're living a Garth Brooks song, Dave.
Everyone's dream. Stu, we got a friend here today.
It's so true. I can't tell you how excited I am for this show. We have finally had, as he said, a long-time listener, first-time caller. Alan is joining us today. Hello, Alan.
Hey guys. Hey, how's it going?
Great. And it looks like you're calling us from some terribly depressing place. Where are you at right now?
Oh man, this isn't depressing, guys. This is where the magic happens. This is my basement studio. So I got,
Oh boy, drum
yeah,
set.
dude. This is where the magic happens.
It looks a lot better. Before we were just seeing like exposed pipes, but when you got us a ground level view, we saw it looked a little better. We've got so much in store for everybody today. We've got a couple of really exciting opening segments. We're going to have a really fun game that we play for the first time called Ask the Marketer because Alan works in marketing. We've got a great segment that you'll understand soon called Brother versus Brother. As usual, we've got some small talk, we've got Unchained Melodies, and we have some book wisdom. But there is a lot to cover. So let's jump right in.
So, guys, all of us here, I have children. One thing with my girls is they never wanted to give me hugs before, and like I found it a little bit upsetting, and I wanted hugs. Like, we're putting them to bed. Like, no one would hug me. No one would let me put them in bed.
Was
And
this a
they all
body
said,
odor issue, Dave?
yeah, this is actually the start of the marketing segment.
Do I have a product for you?
So I came up with this game. The name of the game actually sounds kind of gross, except that I am literally their daddy. It's called the Hug Daddy game.
Wow.
It's
I've
a
heard a
good
lot of
game.
college students are playing this these days.
But every night we'll take my girls into their room, and there's loads of cribs in there, so there's kind of like just a running trail that they can go on all past the cribs. And what I came up with is I hang out. Yeah, this sounds terrible, except I'm their father. I hang out at one spot, and I'm like, "Hey, it's the Hug Daddy game, girls!" And they run to me, and each girl hugs me in turn, and then runs around, and they always say, "I'll be right back," and then run around again, and they give me a hug. It's the best thing in the world.
That's
And so
cute.
now, before they go to bed every night, I get like 10 hugs from each girl. It's amazing.
That sounds great, Dave. You should have saved that actually for when we have Alan's brother John on. You could tell it about a dating strategy.
That might not go over well with grown women, but maybe.
So, but guys, I think this is something you could institute in your home in a totally appropriate way because you both are daddies. I wouldn't say institute this out on the street or anything like that. The Hug Daddy game, if you're talking about that at work, it's probably not appropriate. But with your own children in your own home, it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, no, Stella always she I don't have a problem getting hugs from Stella. In fact, after every bath she says, "Want cuddles?" And so after you take her out of the bath, you gotta like wrap her in a towel and rock her in a chair and just cuddle her, a wet little 3-year-old for a few minutes. Pretty cute.
Oh, that's so good, Alan. Yeah, our guy's a wild man. He likes to spaz around and jump on stuff, and his hugs are pretty violent. So gentle, gentle.
Oh,
That's what Laurel
that's
says most
great.
often when we're hugging. Gentle, gentle.
So what, he just gets like a running start or something?
Oh man, yeah, he's just fearless. He'll just jump on you. claws extended. Well, we also have one of the things we were most interested in, Alan, in addition to the hug daddy dick game. You lived in Norway and are, I believe, still fluent in Norwegian. Is that accurate?
I would say that is accurate. I'm quite a bit rustier than I used to be, but yeah, I can still surprise a Norwegian every once in a while.
Well, we haven't lived in Norway, and we want to know from you top five Norwegian words that every American should know.
So this is a good one. So I think the number one word that all Norwegians want everyone to know is the word hyggelig. So hyggelig.
Hyggelig.
So this is a term that means just like comfortable, cozy, warm, safe. Like this is a term that Norwegians use all the time for stuff. Like, so sitting at home, reading a good book by the fireplace, that's hyggelig.
Having the hug a chat daddy game. The hug daddy game.
The hug daddy game.
It's called hyggelig in Norway.
Yep. Yes, totally. Having a chat with an old friend is hyggelig. Your cabin in the woods can be hyggelig. So that's, they use that word, just, it's a very Norwegian idea of just hygge.
If you combine the idea of a cabin in the woods with the hug daddy game, that is not hyggelig.
that is a good point. That may be something completely different.
Yeah.
I don't know the Norwegian word for that, unfortunately. That was not one that I got much practice on.
That's good.
So moving on, the next one, gladidai. So this is actually a phrase. It's three words, gladidai. And this is actually really, we need this in English because this is a word that sits between love and like. So in America, we love everything. We love ranch dressing. We love our mom. We love our school. Mm-hmm. We love pizza. But in Norway, they reserve the word love for like basically your spouse and like a few other things. But pretty much that word is very precious. And so for everything else that you love, quote unquote, that's when you say gladidai. So it literally translates to glad in you. Yeah, so Steele, I'm glad in you. I don't love you, but I'm glad in you.
You're so glad in me, Alan.
We're glad for each other. We're so glad.
Yeah, can't count the number of times I've been glad in someone else.
This adds like one more step in the relationship. You go from I like you to I'm glad in you. And then when you're really ready to pull the trigger, you go with I love you.
Yeah, totally. So that's when it becomes, that's when it comes real, Dave. So the next one is forelsket.
Oh, and okay. So, I know what this one is.
Oh,
this is
okay.
What they cut off during the circumcision. Is that right?
you know, not quite.
Oh, okay. Just the sound. It's forelsket?
Forelsket.
Oh, forelsket.
Yeah, so this is another love word. So this is a word that describes the actual feeling of falling in love. So, you know, when you talk about like that dizzying euphoria you get when you're just starting to like fall in love with someone, mm-hmm. that is, you are forelsket.
So and, it's a state of being?
Yeah, exactly. So it's sort of like Twitter-pated in English.
But it doesn't sound as stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's not made up by the Disney Corporation.
Oh, yeah. So that's good.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay a licensing fee every time you fall in love.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Let's recap. Let's recap. Oh, what was the first one? The first one was...
Hyggelig.
That's like warm and cozy.
Gladidai.
That's like in between like and love.
Yeah.
And then foreskin was the feeling of being... No, sorry. Forelsket.
Forelsket.
Was the feeling of falling in love.
Yep, totally.
Okay.
And all three of those words, I think, would sum up how I feel when I hear AHA's classic Take on Me. And is that the national anthem of Norway, or
you know, it is. They play it at the Olympics now. It's that's been officially supplanted from Ja vi elsker dette landet. So
yeah, which was also a classic. I mean, we were Dave and I were just humming along to Ja vi elsker dette landet right before you called.
Oh, that's right.
All right, so you got two more for us, Alan.
So this next one is actually probably my favorite. The next word is flink. So flink means clever, quick, smart, talented. It's a really versatile word that can mean a lot. So if a boy figures out how to get to the cookie jar, he's being clever, he's being flink. If you know how to fix a car, you're flink, you've actually got some skill there. If you got good grades in school, you're flink. If you're, you know, if you're smart, you're talented. It works in just so many places. Like, what a flink person you are.
So it's a way to praise someone for ingenuity, yes. Kind of. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Nice. And then number five.
The last, I would be remiss if I did not include "nuff nuff," which is what the pig says in Norwegian.
Oh wow! Pigs say "nuff nuff."
Yes. Yes. Pigs say "nuck nuck." And frogs say quack quack.
I'm not sure I agree with that frog sound. I'm fine with the pig saying, but the frog, no.
What a blast. Thanks, Alan. I feel educated. I'm ready to fall in love with the pig.
That's up to you, Steel.
I'm just ready to listen to Take on Me again.
There is so much good Norwegian culture. I encourage you to drink from the Norwegian cup deeply.
Well, that's great. I think what we ought to do next, before we go into Ask the Marketer, I want to have a quick segment of small talk. And small talk, as longtime listeners know, is where we help arm you with a couple of things to talk about in your next awkward conversation. If you're going into a conversation in a social setting, don't know what to talk about, here are some ideas. Dave, you got something to start us with? Something that's been on your mind lately?
Well, first of all, every day of my life is an awkward social setting just because I'm there. So I'm always searching for stuff to say when I'm at work or anywhere. And a lot of the doctors I work with are Middle Eastern, and they're super into soccer. That's like their thing. So, of course, where do I go in the past couple of weeks? I go with FIFA or FIFA, whatever is the appropriate pronunciation, and the scandal. Have you guys been following this at all?
Yes.
I've been hearing. I've been maybe not as closely as you guys. Being an American, I try to only pay attention to soccer when I need to be truly cool. It's been hard to avoid these last few weeks.
It's amazing. It looks like just every major soccer event of the past like 20 years, these guys are just getting bribed to put it somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are just making tons of money. They're like the mafia. Sepp Blatter he's like Marlon Brando from The Godfather, except making way more money.
The thing about this, Dave, FIFA, like 30 years ago, used to have like 12 employees. And it's considered a non-profit sporting organization organized on these really weird laws in Switzerland. So there's no kind of oversight, no accounting oversight or looking at their books. And it is a multi-billion dollar organization that's run like a private club. And so it's just insane. Like, Sepp Blatter, before he became president of FIFA, look at his resume. He was like the president of the World Society of Suspender Lovers. Like, that was literally his qualification for running FIFA. And the guy who was super powerful in North America was a guy named Chuck Blazer. The whole reason they're being able to pull FIFA down is Chuck Blazer got arrested 10 years ago for tax evasion. And they rolled him over and he agreed to bring a wire into all these FIFA meetings. But Chuck Blazer is like this 350-pound, enormous American with a huge beard. He's just ridiculous. And his prior claim to fame was basically being a single soccer dad. Like, he had no qualifications to be running world soccer or North American soccer. He eventually, FIFA rents him an enormous penthouse apartment in the Trump Tower, and a second apartment next door is his office that he uses basically as a house for his cats. I think it was like a $60,000 a month apartment for his cats.
They were large cats. They were well fed.
Chuck Blazer cats.
What's crazy to me is like all this money's changing hands about like where they're going to hold these big events. When, as an economics major, like I've read many studies that show that like sporting stadiums and Olympics don't actually bring economic prosperity to your city.
No.
So this is on the flip side of like, yeah, Blatter was a really bad guy. You've got basically these government officials that are having a pissing contest with each other about who can get the cool, shiny object in their city.
Well, and it's not even getting the shiny object. It's getting the contracts to build the shiny object because they're siphoning off whatever percentage of, like, we have this massive construction contract. They're going to pay us $3 billion, of which $1 billion will go to construction, and then $2 billion just lie in somebody's pockets. It's really,
yeah.
I mean, the corruption is levels and levels deep there.
And then it's awesome with how much power FIFA then has when they go into these countries. Like,
oh, it's crazy.
Brazil, it was illegal to sell alcoholic beverages in their soccer stadiums. And FIFA's just like, well, Budweiser is one of our advertisers, so that's changing, guys. And so it did.
They changed the law.
They started selling beer.
Yeah, FIFA is its own kind of super governmental organization. It is nuts.
It's like an Austin Powers villain, like this global, powerful thing that led by these buffoons that just are just having money poured into their pockets. It's amazing.
I will say, despite FIFA's incompetence, tomorrow the Women's World Cup starts in Canada, and it's going to be awesome, and I'm going to watch it. I'm really excited. I mean, some of the greatest athletes in the world, male and female, compete in these FIFA events. The spectacle is something really incredible, despite the horrible, horrible corruption.
And my favorite anecdote about that is when Sepp Blatter was asked how to improve interest in women's soccer, he said, well, let's make their shorts shorter.
Yeah. The guy's got very enlightened views on gender. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
That's true. That's, yeah.
Wow.
So that we could probably do an entire show on that, but you can start that conversation with anyone. Take any of those little tokens, and you've got a good conversation going.
You really do.
Especially with Middle Eastern doctors.
And if I would just say any of our listeners interested in following soccer, learning more about soccer, the first thing I recommend is this great podcast called Men in Blazers. Two Englishmen living in New York now have a hilarious podcast, a weekly look at soccer around England and around the world, and they're the best. All right, so Alan, you've got a contribution to Small Talk this week?
What I'm bringing forward for you guys today is The Hobbit, the Tolkien edit.
What?
So it was inevitable that when Peter Jackson announced that he was taking a very short book and turning it into three very long movies, someone was going to go through and cut the fat, and someone has.
Wow.
So this guy, the Tolkien editor, I don't know what his real name is, but he posted a blog on WordPress. It got out on social media. It was taken down about 30 minutes later, but I was able to download it. Basically, what this guy did is he took the whole three films that Peter Jackson produced and cut it into a single four-hour movie. So his intent here was just to be more true to the book. So he's calling it the Tolkien edit, you know, the movie as Tolkien may have told it. The whole prelude at the beginning is gone. So it just starts with Bilbo at his hobbit hole. I never watched the third movie because by the time I got my hands on this, I was like disillusioned by the first two. And I just knew I wasn't going to like the third. So I just watched this one instead. And when I got through, I was like, I don't feel like I missed anything from that third movie. I don't know what on earth Peter Jackson could have added to the Battle of the Five Armies to make it any better than what I just saw. But this guy cut an hour out of that movie. So clearly there was something else in there.
I gave up as well. I love The Hobbit. I've probably read it like 6 or 7 times.
Oh, me too.
I was Bilbo Baggins when I was a little boy for Halloween. No one knew what I was doing, but I was Bilbo. Mm-hmm. And I've never watched the third one. I just couldn't handle it. He kept adding like these weird battle sequences to like times in the book that I thought were just supposed to be lighthearted. All of a sudden, the barrels is an amazing battle fight the river rather than just like a gentle, we're riding in barrels.
Yes, exactly.
I can't handle it. So maybe I'll have to check this out because Peter Jackson, he poisoned my childhood.
The reason that I think The Hobbit is such a great piece of work is I think it is a wonderfully crafted crescendo of character development. So Bilbo starts out as the most meekest, most unassuming thing in the world. And through his adventures, he gradually becomes a little more self-confident, a little more self-assured. Soon the group is relying on him, then they're relying more on him. And soon the whole world is relying on him to save us from this giant apocalyptic battle. And he goes from being just like nothing to this gradual ascent to basically savior. And it's such a satisfying arc to me that you completely lose when you have to cut it into three movies and you need a climax at the end of each three movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to hear more of Alan's opinions about The Hobbit, catch his daily podcast, Alan Explains The Hobbit. Each episode's just a couple of hours long, so plenty of time for it.
And I am a frequent guest on there. I've got a good hour long rant about when Bilbo meets with Smaug the dragon, because I could go off on that.
Yeah, I watched the first one just because I was curious. I liked the original Lord of the Rings, and so I was watching the first one. This is like the only movie that Laurel and I haven't watched together. I was watching it. She was not interested at all. So I was watching it, and at one point she's like, would you actually put headphones on? That sound is so annoying. So I had to watch it with headphones. It's the only time she's ever done that to me. We were over New Year's, we were in San Diego visiting Laurel's sister, and they had got the second one for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so the whole family watched the second one. Well, Laura went to bed pretty much right away, and I stayed and watched it all, but I just was shaking my head. I was like, this is terrible. So Laurel's other sister and I were like texting each other messages, making fun of the movie, and it was just such a disappointment. Yeah. So yeah, I haven't seen the third either.
Yeah, well, I would highly recommend you guys pick up the Tolkien edit from the Tolkien editor and watch it, because it was actually a very good movie.
Okay. Thanks for the recommendation. So I'm going to be real quick about mine. I don't have too much to say about it, but I just want to make a recommendation. Aside from Off the Chain with Dave and Steele, the greatest podcast out there is something called The Memory Palace. It's by a guy named Nate DeMeo. They're fantastic episodes. They look at history. They're really, really good. And just recently, he released a very short film that he had made as a pilot that he was pitching to Fox called Forgotten Things. And it was basically made out of an old Fox newsreel that they used to air before movies back in like the 30s and 40s. It's incredible. Check out Nate DeMeo, The Memory Palace. It will give you something to talk about.
Is this like a documentary style thing, or is this he creating like a fictional narrative out of found footage kind of thing?
It's documentary, but it's kind of got a creative nonfiction thing. He's just a historical storyteller, and he focuses on small moments and details. He just does a fantastic job of making you really feel and think about and care about these really human stories from the past. They're outstanding.
That's cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, so we'll put a link up on the blog. I think small talk, we've covered some important things. Now we're getting to the meat of the episode. And this is something we are bringing to you as a world premiere. It's called Ask the Marketer. Alan, can you tell us what you do for a living?
Yes. So I am a marketer for General Mills. So currently I am working on the Toaster Strudel brand, which is a delicious frozen pastry you can find at your local grocery store or supersized Walmart.
Are you legally required to call it delicious? Is that
that is in the contract, actually, yes. They're actually watching and listening right now over my shoulder.
He's tied up in a basement, Dave. They're like, all right, say delicious so you get the knife.
But yeah, so I am a marketer, and just to clear the air so we understand, marketing is not advertising. A lot of people think that marketers are like the Don Drapers out there who are like creating ads and like stuff like that. So that is not what I do. I am the guy that hires Don Draper and gives him like, you know, hey, direction, like, hey, here's what I want, like, get creative and give me something. But marketing is a lot more than just advertising. Advertising is just like a single tool in the toolbox.
Advertising is for tools, you're saying, and marketing is for the bosses, is what I just heard.
That's basically it. Yes, I would. Okay. I would agree with that. And basically, what marketing is matching products or services to people. You've got people out there with a need. You try and find something to fill that need. Or sometimes you've got a product already, and you've got to figure out, okay, who needs this the most, and how do I get it to them?
So, marketing is a great and noble profession, as Alan has just explained. He works for a particularly delicious product. We want to kind of pick your brain, Alan, and teach us a little bit about how a marketer thinks. So we're going to play a little game called Market This. Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready. I'm prepared.
The first thing we want to give you, Larry Mullen Jr. You may know him as the drummer from the rock band U2. Recently, I think the band's had some highs and lows, as we all are aware. But Larry Mullen Jr., especially, I don't know, should we just call him Larry Mullen now? I believe his father just died recently. Larry Mullen Sr. is no more.
Yes.
But yeah, I want you to market Larry Mullen Jr. to me, because he just doesn't get, he's not as well known as Bono or The Edge or even Adam Clayton. So pull together a marketing plan for old Larry Mullen.
Yeah, so for Larry Mullen, so when we start to think about, you know, this thing we want to market, one of the first things that comes to mind is what is the job that he is performing? Anytime you have a product or a service that a consumer is paying money for, they're hiring that thing to do a job for them. And so we need to think, what is Larry Mullen's job that he's giving us? Well, we would need to go to data, because marketers always look to the data first. And so what is the data telling us? One, U2 has had two albums that have yielded no critical acclaim. Well, have yielded no number one hit singles. They haven't had a hit single in quite a while.
Yeah.
But at the same time, sadly, there's this odd thing where their last tour was the most money-making tour of all time, and their current tour is shaping up to be equally huge. So clearly, the consumer is telling us that there is a job to be done here, that Larry Mullen has a place in our lives and in our hearts. He's just not accomplishing it through U2 and through that medium. So what he really needs to do is release a concept album.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He needs to get really highfalutin out there, because what people are saying is, we don't want the new U2. We want the old stuff. The nostalgia is great, and we will pay forever to sit in an arena with Bono and hear him croon. But give me something new and completely different. And that's why Beyonce is out there. You know, that's why all these other people are selling records, and U2 has to go through Apple. So if Larry comes out and he creates some sort of really highfalutin concept album, that'll do two things. One, it'll help to distinguish his brand from the U2 brand, and he can start to make a name for himself there. But also, it'll give U2 fans something to love about U2 again, because they become such this monolith now. Mm-hmm. If he comes off and does something really weird and off-kilter, that separates the fans from the fair-weather fans. And the true fans can follow him and get excited about something new and different again, and everyone else can just go listen to Where the Streets Have No Name. And that's... Yeah.
But here's my problem with that, Alan, because Larry, I think his top skill is making it so he's absolutely no distraction from Bono whatsoever. I have no idea. I don't know what his name was. When you're watching the concert, you hear drums in the background, but you can't actually see Larry Mullen, because his whole job is, hey, back there, hit those things, but if anybody looks at you and not Bono,
you're dead. Like, yeah, Bono would murder him in the middle of the show.
I do believe that Boy George would disagree with you on that one, and has stated so publicly.
Whoa,
Boy George has a crush on Larry Mullen Jr.?
Oh, big time. So, you know, maybe that's something we can trade on, you know, like sort of like a cross-promotional licensing agreement.
I got an idea,
Alan. And Larry Mullen, yeah.
Okay, here's what we do. Here's the concept album. It's called The Invisible Man? Question mark. So it plays up that he plays Invisible Man, but if you put the question mark around man, then there's some gender ambiguity. He's able to cross over to the... It's a bigger hit in the LGBT community. And
I think Larry Mullen would play well there.
Yeah, I think he's found his target audience now. That's his target market. That's the demographic I think he can reach.
Oh, yeah.
If Boy George is already on board.
That's your credibility.
Heartthrob.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I like it. Okay, so market this. We've got Larry Mullen Jr. under our belt. The next thing we want you to market, Alan, is a website that's near and dear to all of our hearts. It's called Farmers Only, and it is a dating site for farmers. They're big.
Absolutely.
I think right now their tagline is "City folk won't understand," something like that.
This is easy, actually. So, in essence, here what we've got is a site that is really understands their brand champions. So, at General Mills, that's what we call your heaviest users, the people who are most excited and interested in your product. And those are the people you want to cater to. You know, cell phones do this too, where they create these phones that are really catered to like the geekiest of the geeks, and they understand all the specs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And important, because you want to win those guys, because once you've got those guys, sort of the people who kind of care about phones but not much, just kind of look to them as the influencer and say, well, if this guy likes it, then I'll probably use this too. I think that they're already well on their way to creating a great dating site that's really defined a great brand champion for themselves. The next thing I think about is like, where do we take it from here? Where are you going to get growth out of this engine? Because there are only so many farmers, you know, only 4%, I think, of the population are farmers. So where do we go from here?
And how do you make it a growth industry? Is that what
that's
we're asking?
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. We need to grow
reproduction.
This puppy.
Reproduction, though. I mean, that's what happens after you're dating.
Yeah, but that's going to take 20 years. You need growth now. Wall Street wants quick returns. Well, what are you doing this quarter?
Dang it.
So what we're going to do is we're going to move from demographics to psychographics. Are you guys aware of what psychographics are?
Psychographics are like crazy graphics, man. They're psycho.
So that is almost close.
Okay.
A demographic describes what a person is. You're a farmer. You're age 32 to 48. You live in Des Moines. That's literally who you're targeting. But the psychographic is an attitude or belief that you're targeting. So people who want to be close to the earth, people who want to feel good about their work, people who have a belief in raw food and the essentials of food.
They like, hate the city. They think the city's wussified and they love the rural lifestyle.
Absolutely. So these are the people we go to next. We reach outside our brand champions and we start to attract these people who have a strong belief in the value of farmers, but aren't necessarily farmers themselves. And they're going to find stuff that they love on this site too, because they love the core audience of it.
But you seem to be describing like a vegans only dating site. And I don't know that vegans and farmers are necessarily going to mix.
Let the app take care of that, Dave. Just let the app take care of it.
That's right. Well, see, and what's beautiful about this model is now you can create line extensions. Now you've got a successful farmers only site. Now you move to mechanics only and people who are really into like elbow grease and like, you know, slick backed hair. And now you move to like skaters only and you get like all the guys who are still like smoking dope at the skate park at age 32, like
gonna be redheads only.
Gingers only would be awesome. Yeah.
Wow. I like it, Alan. So, okay. So we're moving up the chart here. Market this. Smoking for kids. I read about these new e-cigarettes with like bubblegum flavor and things like that. So I want you to market that.
Okay, great. So let me ask you, can I take some license here? And let's set the stage as I am sort of the lowly kind of, you know, number four, number three player in the market. And, you know, I'm competing against like the Altria, the J.R. Reynolds, the Philip Morrises of the world. The first thing I would do if I'm like...
We're talking about Stouffer brand Kid Cigs. Is this the company?
Yeah. Stouffer brand Kid Cigs. So if I'm here, you know, I'm an e-cigarette company and I just came out with my first line of Kid Cigs. What do? I look at Philip Morris up there and they got so much going for them. The first thing I think is we need to take a page out of the Joe Camel book and we need to create our own cartoon mascot. So nice. I'm thinking Puffy the Panther. He's got leather jacket and he's got like ripped jeans and he's like just sucking on this multicolored, you know, stick that he's loving.
So this is going to play really well in like the 80s gay club scene. But what about kids?
Absolutely. This is what it's for. Now, let me tell you why this is such a great idea. Because when Joe Camel came out in the 1980s, the R.J. Reynolds Company had a really serious problem that they were tackling. There was all of this legislation being talked about on the Hill about like, oh, maybe we should like get rid of advertising cigarettes and stuff. And at the same time, Joe Camel could never beat the Marlboro Man. Marlboro Man was iconic. He had millions and millions of dollars behind him. You just can't beat the Marlboro Man.
He's so handsome.
Oh, he is. So what did Camel do in response? They came out with Joe Camel, and they started audaciously marketing to kids. They weren't interested in getting kids to smoke. What they wanted was they wanted to fan the flames of public opinion so that Congress would take the Marlboro Man out into the street and shoot him in the head. And that's exactly what happened.
What?
So if I'm Stouffer's Kid Cigs and I'm looking at Philip Morris with its millions of dollars for new product development and I just can't compete.
You want to take away their competitive advantage.
Absolutely. So I start making this whole industry feel like it's got something that the public doesn't want. And I just take that completely out so we can focus on the core product and I can beat them there.
Wow.
That's diabolical.
I like it. That's how you do it, guys. That's what it's all about.
I was just thinking
to get more videos of toddlers smoking out there.
We
all love the videos of the Asian toddler smoking. So I just thought we just spread that around some more because it's so adorable.
Yeah,
that's right.
Isn't that
cute?
I want my kid to smoke. Okay, so we've been getting progressively better. We've started at the bottom rungs, the dregs of society with Larry Mullen. Took a step up to farmers. Now we're smoking for kids. Now we want to get great. We want to talk. We want a marketing plan for Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army, Alan.
Yes. So this is the Lord's Resistance Army. I guess here I would take a note out of the P&G playbook. So I was working there, we were doing stuff with the Olympics, right? Mm-hmm. And so P&G had this whole marketing campaign around "Thank You, Mom," all about like the hardworking moms who sacrifice so much to get their kids to the Olympics. And so what they did is they worked with NBC to make sure there was lots of mom content in the program itself. So
when you say in the program itself, you're talking about their coverage of the actual Olympic events.
Yes, exactly. So P&G worked with NBC to make sure that there were lots of shots of mom in the stands watching their kids do the event. And afterwards, there would always be an interview, and you know that
okay.
the kid's going to talk about the mom.
Can I call a timeout? When you say they worked with NBC, what yes. you're saying is that they paid NBC to show this during the program, or what does work with them mean?
Well, I mean, P&G is already paying them, you know, millions and millions of dollars. P&G is one of the largest advertisers in the world, and so NBC knows this. They know that they're getting tons of money from P&G to air spots, and because they're probably getting more money from P&G than anyone else, like, they have an incentive to, like, work with P&G and keep them happy. So,
so P&G is sort of dictating how the Olympics are covered. Not dictating, but influencing.
Yeah, definitely influencing, you know, and NBC's not going to get on board with something that they think is bad for their viewers, but if they can work together to find something that is mutually advantageous, because I think we all love seeing mom, like the mom stories and the family, how the kid got to the Olympics. Like that's and I don't know if you noticed, but that's been a lot bigger in the recent years of Olympic coverage. So
motherhood.
Yeah, and so what we found is that like when you have that same thank you mom P&G ad playing just across from like Seinfeld or something like that, it only lifts so high. When you have it playing at the Olympics with all this mom content built into the show, you get almost twice as much lift out of it. So it's like having great context around your ad really helps the ad speak to people in the consumer.
Okay. When you say lift, can Procter & Gamble like measure what they're getting from this advertising content, like how that's helping their brand?
Yeah. So there are models that we look at that shows like, you know, when this spot goes on air, we can expect X amount of dollars to come in extra on top of what we were already expecting. Yeah.
Okay. And everyone loves mothers. So how is this going to apply to Joseph Kony?
Well, child soldiers? You just want to show more child soldiers in the next coverage of the Olympics?
Yeah, so what I think, what we really need to do is we need to find places where Joseph Kony is going to be really contextually relevant. And so what better place than NCAA sporting events, right? So what's going to happen is you're going to show, like, you're going to be watching these kids, you know, playing for almost nothing while the fat cats are lining their pockets, and then suddenly Joseph Kony comes in there with his great message, and you're like, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that makes sense.
I'm all about this, you know? This is how I do things. So this is I resonate with this Kony guy.
Young people doing the bidding of their wealthy masters. I see.
Yeah, for sure. So that's I think Joseph's going to get a big, big lift out of that one.
Brilliant. Okay, so now we're going to, I mean, the kind of pinnacle of human accomplishment, marketing plan for delicious frozen toaster strudel.
Well, you know, guys, sometimes you just got to know when to walk away from a bad idea. And that's also part of marketing is picking the winners, but also picking the losers. So I just don't think next to Joseph Kony, strudel's got nothing. There's nothing to offer. It's beyond saving. Let's just forget about it.
So, Alan, right at this moment, are there toaster strudels in your freezer?
There are, in fact. It's a strawberry cream cheese flavored. Oh. It's quite delicious.
Yeah, that's a top-rated one in my personal demographic.
It gets a lot of lift. It gets a lot of lift with our psychographic.
With the male nurse psychographic, the dad with three kids, dad hug game crowd, that's big.
I'm telling you right now, Alan, you bring in a case of toaster strudels to any hospital and give it to the nursing staff, like they're going to go nuts.
Absolutely.
It's
I'm sure.
Something to think about.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll do that.
In 30 seconds, Alan, any final takeaways or final thoughts for us on the noble art of marketing?
I think people give marketers too much credit sometimes. At the end of the day, I talk about all these things that we do, but we're pretty much throwing long passes and praying at the end of the day. Like, it's such a hard thing to measure when you're talking about hundreds of millions of people, like, seeing an ad and thinking about buying a product. There's so many things that go into it. I'm just doing whatever I can to push against the giant boulder of the economic engine of this country. So that's something to keep in mind.
Wow. Inspiring thoughts.
Yes, exactly. You have to have a strong will to persist in the marketing world, because so much of what you do can't be measured or attributed to success.
All right, Alan, we got a great segment. Brother versus brother. Alan, you are the first. This is the first time we've had a guest on the show who we also know the guest brother. And the guest brother, in this case, is John. And we're going to have John on our next episode, and we're going to ask him to tell some of the same stories from his perspective. So we're going to get brother versus brother. We're going to tell two either popular or embarrassing family stories, and have you each share your individual perspectives on these.
Okay.
First story we want to hear about. I want to know about the Stouffer family's illustrious career as stars of musicals staged at Kettle Moraine High School.
Oh, man, yes. There is an illustrious career. And it was all started by me, might I say. So growing up, I loved the movie Little Shop of Horrors, starring Rick Moranis and Steve Martin.
Seymour.
Yeah, who didn't?
Yeah, so this is a great movie. And, you know, I'm in high school. I'm walking down this hall one day, and I see this sign posted for auditions for the Little Shop of Horror musicals. And I thought, this is my moment to shine. I am going to be Steve Martin. I am going to make a name for myself in this blighted high school community that it sees no value in me. But now I will make something of myself, and it will be in the Little Shop of Horrors musical.
And they cast you as Rick Moranis instead. Is that what happened?
No, worse. They cast me as Mushnik, Rick Moranis' flower shop-owning adopted father. Yes, yeah, so while I went in with great aspirations, I left being swallowed up by a plant after parading around with another man dancing cheek to cheek with him. So that was maybe not the way I planned to go out, but my inspiration inspired a generation of young Stouffers to enter into the theatrical arts. One of which you saw, Steele. You know, we went to see Fiddler on the Roof together, and I believe it was a highlight of your theater going years, wasn't it?
It's true. It is the best Wisconsin high school musical performance I have ever seen. Tickets were only like $25 too, so I felt like I was getting a steal. And the act that we stayed for was really good, Alan.
Yeah, exactly.
At what point in life did this occur that the two of you saw Fiddler on the Roof together?
Oh, man, we're just hanging out, and we're like, what's going on? And Alan's like, I heard there's going to be a banging performance at Kettle Moraine High School tonight. Let's go check it out. I was like, sure, yeah. I got $30 to burn. And Alan's like, I only stay for one act because then I got stuff to do in the parking lot. And so the daddy hug game.
That's right.
Okay, that's a great story, Alan. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
The next story we wanted you to tell was sharing a bathroom with an entire Mexican family.
Okay, so one thing you got to know about John is he is the cheapest cheapskate you will ever meet in your life. And he
I love him.
And he has absolutely no standards, I guess, for how he wants to live his life. He just basically floats listlessly on the pond of existence, and whatever happens around him, he just sort of takes in and says, well, that happened. So John is living right now in Texas, and he is sharing an apartment with, I don't know how many guys, but one of them's a criminal, I'm sure. And apparently one of his roommates brought his whole family to live with them in their two-bedroom apartment. And so he was sleeping in the same bedroom as an entire Mexican family. And he was apparently did not say, hey, maybe this isn't cool, but just looked around and said, well, this is happening. And I guess in Mexico, the plumbing is such that the pipes are too short. They don't put their toilet paper in the toilet. They actually put it in the garbage next to the toilet. And so John would be using the bathroom, and littered around the bathroom would be things that you don't normally expect to lie outside of the toilet. And all this because he wants to pay $500 a month in rent. So
that's awesome. I can't wait to hear John's version of this great brother-to-brother story.
That is...
That's a very common issue, actually. There's a lot of public restrooms I've been to in the Phoenix metro area where there is a dirty toilet paper lying around.
See, I'm glad there's some corroboration on this story, because I honestly don't know sometimes, like...
It's just John's racism, or whether it's really happening.
Exactly.
Right.
That's a real thing.
Okay, Alan, can you tell me about the time that the Stouffer family was thrown off a tour bus at Old World, Wisconsin?
Yes, I can. So Old World, Wisconsin is the kind of place that only your grandma goes, right? This is where they have reenactments of, like, people making candles and, you know, the looming whatever they do with a loom. So my siblings and I, we like to have a good time. We're a little loud. We're a little rowdy sometimes. And Mom and Dad took us to Old World, Wisconsin. I don't know for what reason, but we were there. And we're sitting on this tram that's taking us from, like, little cabin to cabin. And we're just enjoying ourselves. We're laughing. We're hitting each other. We're yelling at each other. We're talking, saying really annoying things like teenagers and tweens do. Eventually, this tram we were on, which we were sitting in the back, and two empty rows in front of us was about six old people. And eventually, my parents just got sick of us being obnoxious and told the tram driver to stop. And so he stopped, and she gets us all out of the tram and tells them we're walking home. And as the tram pulls away, all these old people start applauding and shouting for joy. And to top it all off, my sister was enjoying herself so much, she decided to pee her pants as we were walking back. So my parents had to deal with the complete and utter embarrassment in front of strangers that her children are completely wild child, and their oldest daughter peed her pants.
Their oldest daughter?
Yes. Yes, so they decided they were never taking us to Old Women's Conference. We've never gone back either, which is kind of funny to me.
But. Yeah, you know, when we went to Old World, Wisconsin, there was like a series of eight photographs on the wall that says, do not allow these people back in Old World, Wisconsin. And they looked a lot like your family, so I don't know what that was about.
That may have been us.
All right, okay, I got two more questions I want you to tell, Alan.
Okay.
One is, your brother John had a famous pair of jeans that didn't make it. Tell me that story.
Okay, so one thing you got to know about my brother is he's a super cheapskate and he doesn't really care about the world around him.
Okay.
John, he really could care less what he looks like. So he has this wardrobe that is just something that I don't think anybody would wear if they actually cared about their appearance. But John has all sorts of clothes that we're constantly having to cull through and be like, John, this underwear has holes in it. It's more holes than underwear. You need to get rid of this. But he's like, whatever, still works. So me, Julie, and John were living together, and we're culling through his stuff, trying to be his, you know, be his protector, show him like, hey, you know, you shouldn't be wearing some of this stuff. And Julie comes across a pair of jeans that were girl jeans. Like, literally, like, these were clearly not like ambidextrous, like they could have gone either way. These were jeans for women. Like mom jeans. And John had been wearing these to college. This was like... And so Julie rips them from him. And John's like, no, those are my jeans. I've only got two pair. I need those jeans.
And they and stretch, so... Julie. They stretch.
That's right. That's right. And so
I like the sparkle.
Yeah.
They're the running around the house. He's trying to take these jeans from her. And she's wrestling them off of him. And finally, she's like, there's only one way I can excise these jeans from existence. And she grabs a lighter, runs to the backyard, and sets them on fire. And John was very upset about that.
I love it. Okay, Alan, the last story. You mentioned the Tolkien edit of the film The Hobbit.
Yes.
And I have heard tell that there was a famous Stouffer family reenactment of The Lord of the Rings in which you played the role of Frodo in a nature park.
Oh, that sounds pleasant.
Yes, yes. So
this is one Alan does not want to tell.
No, it's really not even that. I mean, I kind of put this theater bug in my siblings, and it has kind of backfired because they're a lot more, I don't want to say flamboyant in public with it than I am, but maybe that's what it is. So we're out walking, just having a nice stroll in nature, enjoying the trees. And John and Lisa thought it would be a great idea to reenact the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy on this walk. And I really wasn't interested at all in it. And the problem
there were
is
other people around.
Yeah, we're walking past people, and I just want to enjoy, you know, the loveliness of nature. But I really didn't have a choice in the matter because Lisa and John just decided to proceed and to reenact all three movies. And the problem is I couldn't really not go along with it because Frodo, all he really does in that movie is walk. So all I could do was continue on my walk as these two built this story around me, and I kept telling them that I'm not participating.
But the other hard part was that you knew literally all of the dialogue, so when they said something wrong, you just couldn't help but, like, correct them. You're like, no, he said that after he met Galadriel.
That's right. Worst reenactment ever, guys.
And that is not historically accurate.
For the entire three movies, Frodo has the same expression, kind of worried expression on his face. So you probably naturally just had the Frodo expression on your face.
Oh, for sure. I was a natural, guys. This was probably the pinnacle of my acting career, to be honest.
Wait, who played Sam during this?
I believe that John played Sam, and he would pick me up at times and say, I'll carry you! And then he'd say, the strawberries, Mr. Frodo, the strawberries!
Wow, Alan. Hey, just some listeners have asked us about this, but have you and John ever had a boxing or wrestling match, the two of you?
So, no. No, we have not. Oh. No, there have been many rumors about a supposed fight between me and John, and I can say right now I'd like to use this as my platform to get it out in the open that this match is not happening. We will not be doing it. I think John's not willing to meet my demands, and so I think, you know, we can put it on him. He's the one who doesn't want it to happen.
Because the last time I talked to him, he was literally covered in baby oil and said he was ready. Loincloth and baby oil, and he said, bring Alan.
You know, he says that, but then he makes these outrageous demands about the purse, and I'm like, no, guy, look, you wanna meet me in the middle, that's fine, but I'm fighting on my terms, not yours.
70-30 is what you told him, right? 70-30?
Yeah. 70-30 plus all merchandising proceeds. That, it's simple as that, and he won't even take the drug test, so we're at an impasse.
Alan, it sounds like you're the Mayweather and he's Pacquiao.
Yeah, it would seem.
You're kind of dodging him.
Yeah, no. I'm the Mayweather, and he's dodging me. He's making all these ridiculous.
That's what Mayweather. He's like, I just want all the money, and I want him to be drug tested. He said that for years.
Well, hey, when you're bringing in all of the audience, when you're doing all, when you're the star of the show, man, like, you can make those demands. What's John gonna do? What's he bringing to the?
What's
table,
the little huh? brother gonna do? Come on,
That's
he's
right.
the little brother.
That's right. He gets the bottom bunk. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, and it's irritable bowel syndrome. Oh, man. So brother to brother, huge success. I can't wait to hear John's version of these stories. Alan, I appreciate it so much.
Oh, it was fun to walk down memory lane with you guys.
Well, we've got some Unchained Melodies. The theme this week, Dave, you want to explain what our theme is?
We're sharing some songs that are inspired by fictional characters. And still, there's one fictional character that's probably inspired the most songs ever, and that's the Man of Steel, Superman.
Hey, the Man of what?
I
like it.
Well played, Steel. Well played. That's the first character I thought of, even though it's documented that I think Superman's lame. I actually like a lot of the songs that are addressing his lameness. Probably my favorite Superman song of all time is The Flaming Lips, Waiting for Superman.
I didn't need you to reply. Is it getting heavy? But then I realized it's getting heavy. Well, I thought it was all.
Beautiful song. I love The Flaming Lips. That's from their classic album, The Soft Bulletin. I'm just wondering, what do you guys think? Why are there so many songs about Superman? Why can people not? Why are they writing these all the time?
For me, I feel like Superman is sort of that ultimate pinnacle that man strives to be and never is. And so there's a great tension there that so many creative works can feed on that tension.
I think there's probably two reasons that I would add. One is he wears his underwear outside his pants. Very attractive to songwriter types. And two, the name Superman itself is melodically nice, and it's got a lot of rhymes, so it's easy to work into song lyrics.
Yeah, Superman, frying pan. It's there. It just happens. It rolls off the tongue.
That's right.
So I've got a song for you, Dave. This one's especially for you. I know your least favorite comic book character, Superman, but your most favorite?
You know it. It's the Incredible Hulk.
This is a song by a twee pop band from New Zealand called the Brunettes. And the song is called Hulk is Hulk.
Hulk is not a puny. Hulk is not a flea. Hulk. If I were a Hulk, no one would pick on me. Not with bulging muscles of emerald green. A primitive mind that couldn't grasp a thing. My friends would all react with shocking.
That's basically a Pavement song about Hulk. No better song has ever been written for Dave. All right, Alan, what do you got for us?
Thank you.
All right, well, let's go to Mumford and Sons. They've got a really great song that I like off of their, I guess it was their first album. It's called Teamsel.
Cold is the water. Freezes your already cold, cold mind. And death is at your doorstep, and it will steal your innocence, but it will not steal your substance. You are not alone in this, and you are not alone in this. As brothers, we will stand and we'll hold your hand. Hold your hand.
Well, so Mumford and Son takes a lot of inspiration from fiction, and this is inspired by East of Eden by John Steinbeck, which is like one of my probably my favorite book of all time. And Teamsel, that is like the last word of the book, and it is just speaks to this moment in the book that's just beautiful and climactic and wonderful, and so that's why I love the song.
I was thinking it was a reference to Fievel Goes West. I imagine that Teamsel was like his dad's name or something. It sounded very Fievel Goes Westy to me. Well, I'm glad to know it was a literary reference and not a cartoon.
Well, it's set in the West, so you're very close. I mean, Fievel could have been in the Salinas Valley. You know, we don't know where he ended up.
There are no cats in the Salinas Valley.
Is somewhere out there, is that your selection for this episode still?
Oh, it's definitely.
A beautiful song.
That's my life selection.
That's right.
All right, Dave, second song for us?
I'm sticking with Superman, and Steel, I haven't seen you dance yet. So if I want to see Steel dance, there's only one group to put on. That's the Spin Doctors.
You got me figured out.
On their now classic album, Pocket Full of Kryptonite, featuring multiple hits. But this is a deep cut called Jimmy Olsen's Blues Song.
I don't think I can handle this. The clarity in the metropolis. I think I'll talk to my analyst. I got so baffled. Lane, oh, lost lane, beat them in your plan.
Did you, he rhymed this, metropolis, and ananist? That is lyrical genius.
Poetry.
That is brilliant.
The best part, the thing I love most about the Spin Doctors, the song had been going for 20 to 25 seconds, and I wasn't really sure if I had played the right song. I was like, is this actually the one Dave requested or not? Like, you never know until they bring the lyrics in. You're like, oh, I guess this song is different because it has different words.
Yeah, I was worried that maybe we were listening to two princes there.
Weren't you? Well. Like, you're like, yes. Oh, the guitar sounds exactly the same on every song. They're so good.
You got a formula, you know? Don't mess with it.
Marketing rules right there.
That's, there we go. They know what they're doing.
Well, of course they do. It's beautiful. I advise anyone to listen to the rest of the song, and you'll understand Jimmy Olsen and his feelings towards Superman. It's tough.
Man. Okay, so I'm going to play a song here, but I'm going to make a recommendation. Check out a rapper named The Last Emperor. He's got songs called Secret Wars 1 and 2. He pits comic book characters against other characters and imagines them battling and seeing who would win. But the song that I want to play for Unchained Melodies today is a band by the classic kind of punk group Suicide. The song is called Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. He's looking so cute. Sneaking right around in a blue jumpsuit. Who's riding a motorcycle hero? Beep, he's blazing away. Like the stars in the universe.
Ghost Rider's a motorcycle hero.
Yeah. Flaming skull. Chains. Pretty interesting.
He's got a good look. All right, Alan, close us down with Unchained Melodies. What's the last fictional character song we need to remember?
Well, I think when it comes to fictional characters memorialized through song, there is no fictional character with as great a theme song as Scrooge McDuck. And so I would like to close us out with the theme song to DuckTales.
Life is like a hurricane here in Duckburg. Race cars, lasers, aeroplanes. It's a duck blur. Might solve a mystery or rewrite history. DuckTales, woo! Every day they're out there making DuckTales, woo! Tales of daring, do bad, and good luck tales, woo!
So the secrets to making Steel Dance are both the Spin Doctors and the DuckTales theme song. That's what you need to bring.
I gotta tell you, we've got a new theme song for the show. Man, I just was waiting for the next rhyme. I was like, what are they going to drop on me next? Here, Duckburg.
That's right. It's a duck blur, guys.
Oh, man.
It's a terrific show. Terrific show.
Truly.
Wow. Well, I feel like my ears have been open. My heart's been open. The tear ducts have been loosened up a little bit. Just, I'm feeling good about life right now.
Wonderful.
Would you be willing to change all of that by sharing a passage from East of Eden, Alan?
Absolutely. I would love to. So my favorite book, as I mentioned in Unchained Melodies, favorite book is East of Eden by John Steinbeck. And here in chapter 13, he kind of starts off the chapter with kind of a big diatribe on the creative process and kind of why, kind of what he's doing as a writer. He has this great passage where he says, "It is true that two men can lift a bigger stone than one man. A group can build automobiles quicker and better than one man, and bread from a huge factory is cheaper and more uniform. When our food and clothing and housing are all born in the complication of mass production, mass method is bound to get into our thinking and to eliminate all other thinking. In our time, mass or collective production has entered our economics, our politics, and even our religion, so that some nations have substituted the idea collective for the idea God. This, in my time, is the danger. This is a great tension in the world, tension toward a breaking point, and men are unhappy and confused. At such a time, it seems natural and good to ask myself these questions: what do I believe in? What must I fight for? And what must I fight against?
Great. Classic John Steinbeck novel. What do I believe in? What must I fight for? What must I fight against?
I love Steinbeck. I think just his use of language always feels crisp and very clear to me, that he's just able to present things in such a way that it's not muddled. And I don't feel like it's a chore to read what he's writing, because he's just presenting it to me in such a clear way.
And I love how he takes, you know, he takes the idea of, obviously this is, you know, written during a time when communism was the big thing that everyone was worried about. And he takes that idea and he connects it to creativity and the creative process, and how what he's doing is standing up for the individual ideas that a single creative person can make. And I do believe that, like he says in this book, that the very next sentence is, our species is the only creative species, and it is only one creative instrument, the individual man and the spirit of man. Nothing was ever created by two men. There are no good collaborations, whether in music, in art, in poetry, in mathematics, or philosophy. And I believe that. Like, yeah, I work on a team of marketers, but at the end of the day, like, the group can only take great inspiration, one bit of genius, and expound on it. But I believe that genius can't come from two people at the same time. That's why Larry Mullen has to go strike out on his own.
You guys, John Steinbeck never heard the Beatles, guys. Lennon and McCartney, come on.
Yeah, and no coincidence, John Lennon and Vladimir Lenin shared the last name. Oh, red threat. No, but Alan, thanks so much for being on the show. This has been a blast. The time has just flown by. You've been a fantastic guest.
And I was happy you guys would have me, so thanks a lot.
Yeah, our pleasure.
We'll see you around, Alan.
Yeah, talk to you guys later. Off the chain.
I think of it as the difference between, like, oral and full prostitution.
More sure of a hand job, really. That's the Stouffer way. You know it. Well, it's half day Fridays, buddy. Don't need to go to work.
Oh, sweet.
And here I am using my basement like a sucker.
So because this is popular with the horniest of farmers, then other farmers will kind of buy in?
Yeah, if you're not quite as horny as a farmer, but you know that Joe is, you're going to be like, okay, what site does he use?
I keep trying to turn the volume down on my computer.
Cut out whatever you want here, but he says that...
Oh, don't worry, Alan. Almost everything you said is gone.